Let me begin by saying what an honor it is to be introduced by Ted Sorensen, somebody who was a witness and a maker of history, somebody who wrote some of the finest speeches in American history, somebody who has become a great friend and mentor, and I am extraordinarily appreciative of all the work he has done, not just on behalf of our campaign, but on behalf of this country. So please give Ted Sorensen a big round of applause. I want to thank Alicia Claypool for her extraordinary support and her introduction of Ted. I also want to introduce a young person who is working with me. Some of you know that I'm not originally from Chicago. I moved to Chicago after I'd gotten out of college because I wanted to be a community organizer. I wanted to work on the grassroots level to deal with people who needed help. And there were a group of churches on the far south side that were hiring somebody to deal with the devastation of steel plants that had closed. So they hired me. They didn't have a lot of money. I was all they could afford. And I drove out to Chicago, didn't know a soul, and for the next 3.5 years, I worked as an organizer. And it was the best education I ever had, but I discovered fairly quickly, after 3 or 4 months, that if you're an organizer, that means you are underpaid and you are underappreciated. Now, I am running for president, and I've got a lot of young staff people who are underpaid and underappreciated. And I don't want to pay them any more money, but I do want to appreciate them. So I want to introduce to all of you our Polk County Regional Field Director, Chelsea Walliser. Where's Chelsea? Is Chelsea around? Well, Chelsea's busy working. We'll get Chelsea out here somewhere before the day is over. But Chelsea, there she is, way in the back. See, she's waving. She's terrific. Here is what I need you to do for Chelsea. If you have not yet signed up as a Barack Obama supporter, hopefully after this speech you will, fill out one of those cards. We'll have volunteers all across the doors. You won't be able to get out without seeing one of these cards. If you are already a supporter, then I would love for you to fill out another card indicating that you want to be a precinct captain, because we need precinct captains in every precinct all across Iowa. And if you are not going to be a precinct captain, then we want you to find 4 more supporters to caucus for us. That's a pretty simple assignment. So we would love to have all of you involved. And before I even get started, I know the rules here in Iowa. I want all of you to caucus for me, so you can't say that I didn't ask you. I know Iowans are tough. You like to lift the hood and kick the tires, take your candidates out for a test drive. But, you know, there's starting to get a little nip in the air. It is time for making decisions. And I hope that you make a decision on my behalf. The only other thing I want to do, I see my 2 Iowa co-chairs here, and I would be remiss if I did not introduce them. Your great Attorney General, Tom Miller. Always got his Obama sign ready. And your fantastic treasurer, Mike Fitzgerald. All right. You know, recently, the wife of a soldier from Illinois wrote to me, and she said that her husband, and I quote, feels like he's stationed in Iraq and deploys home. He feels like he's stationed in Iraq and he deploys home. That's a tragic statement, and it could be echoed by families across our country who've seen loved ones deployed to tour after tour of duty. As I travel around the country, so many Americans ask me, how did we go so wrong in Iraq? Now, there are those who offer up easy answers. They will assert that Iraq is George Bush's war, that it's all his fault, or that Iraq was botched by the arrogance and incompetence of Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, or that we would have gotten Iraq right if we had just gone in with more troops, or if there had been a stronger Iraqi prime minister. These are all easy answers. And like most easy answers, they are partly true. But they don't tell the whole truth, because they overlook a harder and more fundamental truth. The hard truth is that the war in Iraq is not about a catalog of many mistakes. It's about one big mistake. The war in Iraq should have never been fought. Now, 5 years ago today, I was asked to speak at a rally against going to war in Iraq. The vote to authorize the war in Congress was less than 10 days away, and I was a candidate for the United States Senate. Some friends of mine advised me to keep quiet, to lay low. Going to war in Iraq, they pointed out, was popular. All the other major candidates were supporting the war at the time. If the war goes well, my friends indicated, you will have thrown away your opportunity to be elected to the Senate. But I didn't see how Saddam Hussein posed an imminent threat. I was convinced that a war would distract us from Afghanistan and the real threat from Al-Qaeda. I worried that Iraq's history of sectarian rivalry could leave us bogged down in a bloody conflict. And I believed the war would fan the flames of extremism and lead to new terrorism. So I went to the rally, and I argued against what I called then a rash war, a war based not on reason, but on politics, an occupation of undetermined length, with undetermined costs and undetermined consequences. But the conventional thinking in Washington has a way of buying into stories that make political sense, even if they don't make practical sense. We were told that the only way to prevent Iraq from getting nuclear weapons was with military force. Some leading Democrats echoed the administration's erroneous line that there was a connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. We were counseled by some of the most experienced voices in Washington that the only way for Democrats to look tough was to talk and act like a Republican. The American people weren't just failed by a president who rushed to war. They were failed by much of Washington, by a media that too often reported spin instead of fact, by a foreign policy elite that largely boarded the bandwagon of the war, and most of all, by the majority of a Congress, a co-equal branch of government, that voted to give the president the open-ended authority to wage war that he uses to this day. So let's be clear. Without that vote, there would be no war. Some now seek to rewrite history. They argue that they weren't really voting for the war. They were voting for inspectors, or they were voting for diplomacy. But the Congress, the administration, the media, and the American people all understood what we were debating in 2002. This was a vote about whether or not to go to war. That's the truth as it was understood then, and as we need to understand it now. And we need to ask those who voted for the war, how can you give the president a blank check and not expect him to cash it? The conventional thinking today is just as entrenched as it was in 2002. This is the conventional thinking that measures experience only by the years that you've been in Washington, not by your time spent serving in the wider world. This is the conventional thinking that has turned against the war, but not against the habits that got us into the war in the first place, the outdated assumptions, and the refusal to talk openly to the American people. Well, I am not running for president to conform to Washington's conventional thinking. I am running to challenge it. I'm not running to join the kind of Washington groupthink that led us to war, that says we can't tell the American people what we think on big issues. I'm running for president to change this country, and I'm going to tell the American people where I stand on these critical issues that face our country. So I want everybody in Iowa to be clear. There is a choice that's emerged in this campaign, one that the American people need to understand. They should ask themselves this: who got the single most important foreign policy decision since the end of the Cold War right, and who got it wrong? This is not just a matter of debating the past or I told you so. It's about making a determination who's got the best judgment to make the critical decisions going into the future. Because when we have a debate about experience, which I am happy to have, we can't just debate who has the most experience scoring political points. Because no matter what we think about George Bush, he will be gone in 2009. George Bush is not on the ballot. This election is about ending the war in Iraq. But even more importantly, it's about moving beyond it. And we're not going to be safe in a world of unconventional threats with the same old conventional thinking that got us into Iraq in the first place. We're not going to unify. We won't unify a divided America to confront these threats with the same old conventional politics of just trying to beat up on the other side. In 2009, we will have a window of opportunity to renew our global leadership and bring this nation together. If we don't seize that moment, we may not get another. This election is a turning point. The American people get to decide, are we going to turn back the clock or are we going to turn the page? I want to be straight with you. If you want conventional Washington thinking, I'm not your man. If you want rigid ideology, I'm not your man. If you think that fundamental change can wait, then I am definitely not your man. But if you want to bring this country together, if you want experience that's broader than just learning the ways of Washington, if you think that the global challenges we face are too urgent to wait, and if you think that America must offer the world a new and hopeful face, then I offer a different choice in this race, and I offer a different vision for our future. Now, the first thing we have to do is to end this war. And the right person to end it is someone who had the judgment to oppose it from the beginning. There is no military solution in Iraq, and there never was. I will begin to remove our troops from Iraq immediately. Not 2 years from now, or 3 years from now, or 5 years from now, but now. I will remove 1 to 2 brigades per month and get all of our combat troops out of Iraq within 16 months. The only troops I will keep in Iraq will perform the limited, ordinary missions of protecting our diplomats, as well as carrying out targeted strikes on Al-Qaeda, and I will launch the diplomatic and humanitarian initiatives that are so badly needed to actually stabilize the country. So let there be no doubt, I will end this war. But it's also time to learn the lessons of Iraq. We're not going to defeat the threats of the 21st century on a conventional battlefield. We cannot win a fight for hearts and minds when we outsource critical missions to unaccountable contractors like we've been reading about over the last several weeks. We're not going to win a battle of ideas with bullets alone. Make no mistake, we must always be prepared to use force to protect America. But the best way to keep America safe is not to threaten terrorists with nuclear weapons, it's to keep nuclear weapons and nuclear materials away from terrorists. And that's the reason. That's why, as president, I will lead a global effort to secure all loose nuclear materials during my first term in office. And that's why, when I am president, America will lead the world in the direction of a world without nuclear weapons. We will set a goal of dramatically reducing the stockpiles of these weapons and materials. We will set a goal of dramatically reducing the stockpiles of these weapons and materials and the intermediate range missiles that can deliver them. And this is going to require a new era of American diplomacy. We need a president who is willing to talk to all nations, friend and foe. It's time to turn the page on the Bush-Cheney diplomacy of not talking to our adversaries. Let me be clear about this. I'm not afraid of America losing a propaganda battle to some petty tyrant. We need to go before the world and win those battles for hearts and minds. It's time to offer the world a message of hope to counter the prophets of hate. You know, my experience brought me to the hopeless places around the world. As a boy, I lived in Indonesia, and I played barefoot with children who couldn't dream the same dreams that I did. Couldn't imagine going to college or having food on the table all the time or running water or electricity. As an adult, I've returned to be with my family in their small village in Kenya, where the promise of America is still an inspiration, but day-to-day life is fraught with hardship. As a community organizer, I worked in Southside neighborhoods that had been left behind by global change. As a senator, I've been to refugee camps in Chad, where proud and dignified people can't hope for anything beyond the next handout. In the 21st century, progress must mean more than just a vote at the ballot box. It must mean freedom from fear and freedom from want. We cannot stand for the freedom of anarchy, nor can we support the globalization of the empty stomach. The UN has a goal of cutting poverty in half around the world by 2015. When I'm president, that will be America's goal, and we'll double foreign aid to reach it. In the 21st century, we can't stand up before the world and say that there's one set of rules for America and another for everyone else. To lead the world, we must lead by example. When I am president, we will reject torture without exception and without equivocation. When I am president, we will close Guantanamo. When I am president, we'll be the country that credibly tells the dissidents in prison camps around the world that America is your voice, America is your dream, America is your light of justice. But we cannot secure America and show our best face in the world unless we change how we do business in Washington. We all know what Iraq has cost us abroad, but these last few years we've seen an unacceptable abuse of power at home. We've paid a heavy price for having a president whose priority is expanding his own power. The Constitution is treated like a nuisance to be avoided as opposed to the foundation of our liberty. We get shifting spin and secret task forces and secret budgeting and slanted intelligence and the shameful smearing of people who speak out against the president's policies. All that has to come to an end. Because all of this has left us where we are today, more divided, more distrusted, more in debt, and mired in an endless war. A war to disarm a dictator has become an open-ended occupation of a foreign country. This is not America. This is not who we are. It's time for us to stand up and tell George Bush that the government in this country is not based on the whims of one person, The government is of the people, by the people, and for the people. We thought we had learned this lesson. After Vietnam, Congress even wrote a new law, the War Powers Act, to ensure it would not once again be duped into war. But no law can make senators read the intelligence that showed the president was overstating the case for war. No law can give the Congress the backbone to stand up to the president. That's why it's not enough to change parties. It's time to change our politics. We don't need another president who puts politics over candor. We don't need another president who thinks big but doesn't feel the need to tell the American people what they think. The American people are not the problem in this country, they are the answer. And it's time we had a president who acted like that. Which is why I will always tell you what I think, I will always tell you where I stand, I will always tell you the truth. It's what I'm doing in this campaign, and it's what I will do as President of the United States of America. As President of the United States, I will lead to a new era of openness. I'll get the politics out of the intelligence agencies. I'll stop the excessive secrecy. And I'll turn the page on a politics that treats national security as a partisan issue, as opposed to an American issue, because it's time to unite America. It's time for us to come together to end this war and to move this country forward. There's those who suggest that there are easy answers to the challenges we face. We can look, they say, to Washington experience, the same experience that got us into this war. Or we can turn the page to something new, to unite this country and to seize this moment. Now, I am not a perfect man, and I will not be a perfect president. But my own American story tells me that this country moves forward when we cast aside our doubts and begin to seek new beginnings. It's what brought my father across an ocean in search of a dream. It's what I saw in the eyes of men and women and children in Southeast Asia who heard the word America when I was growing up, and I could see that they thought of all the possibilities beyond the horizon. It's what I saw on the streets of the South Side when people who had every reason to give in finally decided to pick themselves up. It's what I've seen in the United States Senate on those occasions when Republicans and Democrats of goodwill do come together to take on tough issues. And most of all, it's what I've seen in this campaign when over 500,000 Americans have come together to seek the change this country needs. Now, I know that some will shake their heads. It's easy to be cynical. But right now, somewhere in Iraq, there's a young American at war. He's maybe on his second or third tour. It's hot. He would rather be home. But he's in his uniform. He's got his combat gear on. He's getting in a Humvee. He's going out on patrol. He's lost a buddy in this war, maybe more than one buddy. He risked his life yesterday, and he's risking his life today, and he will risk his life tomorrow. So why do we reject cynicism? We reject it because of men and women like him. We reject it because the legacy of their sacrifice must be a better America. We reject it because they embody the spirit of those who fought to free the slaves, those who fought to free a continent from a madman, those who rebuilt Europe and sent Peace Corps volunteers around the globe, because they're fighting for not just a better America, but also a better world. And I reject it because I wouldn't be on this stage if throughout our history, America had not made the right choice over the easy choice, the ambitious choice over the cautious choice. I wouldn't be here if I didn't think we were ready to move past the fights of the 1960s and the 1990s. I wouldn't be here if, time and again, in the words of Ted Sorensen, the torch had not been passed to to a new generation, to unite this country at home, to show a new face of this country abroad. I am running for the presidency of the United States of America so that together we can do the hard work to seek a new dawn of peace and prosperity for our children and for the children of the world. Thank you very much, Iowa. I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you.